This message comes from On Point sponsor Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield approval. If you qualify and if rates go up, your rate stays the same. But if rates go down, your rate also drops. To learn more, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm David Folkenflik. And this is the new On Point. My partner, Meghna Chakrabarty, will handle Mondays through Thursdays. I'm going to keep on as NPR's chief media correspondent. But this is the first in what I trust will be many Folkenflik Fridays. We'll range far afield, events scattered across the globe and close to home, with a fresh approach and an enduring mission. We'll continue to take a look at the week's news. And what a year this week was. Arctic ice cracking apart, vast changes to environmental policies, corruption alleged against members of Congress. But today, we'll largely focus on a single, sprawling topic. We live in an age said to be post-truth, post-shame, and in an era when attacks are ad hominem and ad nauseum, beyond the capacity to register at all. Yet, put a pin in Tuesday, August 21st, 2018. The president's former campaign chairman found guilty on 8 criminal counts in a federal courtroom in Virginia. On the same day in New York City, a lawyer stood in another federal courtroom and said his former client, who's now the president of the United States, personally directed him to commit a crime to affect the 2016 election. All culminating with this, President Trump speaking to Fox and Friends earlier this week.
I don't know how you can impeach somebody who's done a great job.
We invited 43 of the president's fellow Republicans in Congress to participate in this show. 43. None agreed to take part. We are fortunate instead to have with us today Congressman Adam Schiff of California, the top Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee and a former federal prosecutor. He joins us from Washington. Congressman Schiff, welcome to the new On Point.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Congressman, what does the events of this week, what do they say about our president? What have we learned?
Well, I keep thinking back to something Comey said some months ago, that he was struck in his initial meetings with the president how much he seemed to conduct himself like a mafia boss. And in the comments of the president this week, in talking about what a wonderful and a man that Paul Manafort is and how much respect for he has and how he is not going to rat like other people, and his attacks on Michael Cohen for flipping or cooperating and suggesting that should be illegal, he's talking like a mafia don, and that is just a breathtaking thing to contemplate in a president of the United States.
It's a pretty serious thing to say. I mean, it's kind of funny to compare the president, in a sense, to The Sopranos, and yet when you step back on it, it's pretty sobering.
Well, you know, it's really hard to overlook when you have the president attacking the attorney general because he won't bring an end to an investigation that is producing conviction after conviction after conviction. And he's urging that same attorney general basically to investigate his vanquished political rivals. And sadly, you have now two prominent senators suggesting that that's okay with them. That if the president wants to fire the attorney general for an illicit reason, they're okay with that, and they will help him find a successor that might be more willing to do the president's bidding.
Well,
this is a direct threat, I think, to our democracy.
Well, I want to drill down on that a little bit. I mean, the president has talked about the loyalty he believes he's owed from the attorney general, Jeff Sessions, one of the earliest supporters of the campaign, but now the nation's chief law enforcement officer. The attorney general has pushed back on that. But doesn't the president have the authority to do that? What is the harm that you see?
Well, this is a legal question that keeps cropping up. Does the president have the legal authority to, for example, fire his attorney general or fire the director of the FBI or remove people's security clearances? And the answer is yes, you have the power to do it, but not the power to do it for a corrupt reason. This is true in a lot of aspects of law. The fact that I can fire an employee doesn't mean that you can fire them because they reject your sexual advance. There are all kinds of examples in the law where you may have the discretion. People may work for you and be employees at will, but that doesn't mean that you can fire them or get rid of them for corrupt reasons. And here, the reason that the president wants to fire the attorney general and replace him is because the president wants someone who will end the Mueller investigation, that will persecute his political rivals. That is a corrupt intent. And when members of the Senate basically signals the president that they'll go along with it, when 43 members of Congress that you've called to try to come on and talk about this and and see whether they'll be willing to stand up to the president, and they all hide, that is a real threat to our system of checks and balances.
You know, obviously, this will play out in court. Paul Manafort, the president's former campaign chairman, was found guilty on 8 counts that did not have to do with the president directly. On the other hand, Michael Cohen allocuted when pleading guilty to 8 counts. Among the counts were ones in which he said he was directed by the president of the United States to commit an act that Cohen said was intended to hide the influence of an act intended to shape the outcome of the 2016 election. What are the likely steps on the Hill that we're going to see as opposed to the steps we're going to see in court?
Well, with respect to Paul Manafort, I would say a couple of things. First, we found out after the verdict that the jury would have convicted on all of the counts except for a single juror. Now, that would indicate that it's likely that the Justice Department will initiate a second trial on those remaining counts. And I think because of that, and because the former campaign chair also faces a completely separate trial in a different district, and it looked like with all this pressure, with all the time he was facing in jail, he might also flip on the president. The president, through his lawyer this week, signaled there's a pardon waiting for him after the election. And I have to say, I really hope that voters are listening, because do they really want a Congress after the election that is willing to allow the president to obstruct justice by pardoning people? And so in terms of the Congress, what ought to be happening right now is members of Congress of both parties ought to be speaking out and ought to be condemning even the prospect of a pardon. And there have been no more than, I think, one or two Republicans that had the courage to do that. With respect to the Cohen plea, that may be the far more significant event of that day because he personally implicates the president in criminal activity.
Mm-hmm. You know, we obviously are not hearing a lot from Republicans publicly about these very events that we're talking about. But I imagine that you talk to Republicans on the Hill, both in person and privately, about these things. What are you hearing behind the scenes from folks across the aisle?
Well, you know, it's astonishing to me sometimes because the GOP members will confide things privately that, of course, they won't say publicly. And I've had very senior Republicans tell me, with respect to the work that I'm doing, keep doing what you're doing.
But members of the Republican Party
do it. Yes, but they won't do it themselves and they won't speak out themselves. And at one level, you can understand from a very practical political point of view why they don't want to anger the Trump base, which is still a majority of their constituency back home. But on the other hand, why be in the Congress? What's the point of being there? Why did Paul Ryan want to be Speaker if he wouldn't stand up for institutions when they were at risk? So I don't understand the silence. The country really needs people to defend our system of checks and balances and our institutions right now because they're under assault from this president.
You know, there's a word that some of your colleagues on the Hill and some of your colleagues off the Hill and some voters that you see online like to invoke. And it's also a word that a lot of people want to stay far away from as we get into the election season. The president himself talked at least with Fox and Friends about the question of impeachment. You know, is that a very premature thing to consider, or do this week's events change your thoughts on that?
I still think that we need to allow Bob Mueller to finish his work and see the full body of evidence before we make any decision about what the appropriate remedy ought to be. 2 days ago, we had one person, Michael Cohen, alleging that the president was engaged in criminal activity, and that was somebody who was engaged in that activity as well. It now appears that you have one or two more witnesses against the president at the National Enquirer who may have struck a deal in exchange for immunity. But we still haven't seen the body of evidence that Bob Mueller and the Southern District of New York may have on a whole range of conduct by the president. That goes from the allegations of conspiracy or collusion with the Russians to issues that involve obstruction of justice. And I think it's the totality of that evidence that we would need to consider when looking at that extraordinary remedy of impeachment. So having tried an impeachment case myself in the Senate some years ago against a corrupt federal judge, I have some personal experience in this. And I think we need to wait until the full evidence is in.
Briefly, before we relinquish you, there are a lot of people who feel that a lot of these judgments will be ultimately political. The president's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, has said, ultimately, it doesn't look to him as though there's any credible evidence the president broke the law. And if he did, it was probably election law. And it's in a way where, presidential campaigns from time immemorial have had to pay fines and acknowledge violating campaign finance laws. Why is this serious in and of itself? Why should the American people pull themselves from their lives and from other issues that are playing out in Washington and in their hometowns to pay attention to this?
Well, certainly if the president was engaged in a conspiracy to obtain the help of a foreign adversarial power during the election, that's something that the American people need to take with the utmost seriousness. And likewise, if the president is obstructing justice. The campaign violations, though, are also significant. We're not talking here about an unintended error. The campaign contribution limit is $2,700, and he took $2,800 or $2,900. What we're talking about here was a deliberate decision, a conspiracy to violate the laws in ways that might have affected the outcome of the election. If those stories about president having an affair with a Playboy playmate and with a porn star had come out in the weeks just prior to the election, they may very well have swung this very close election. So we are talking about a potentially election-altering campaign violation. And so I think that puts it in a much different category than the kind of bookkeeping errors that may take place far more commonly.
And if this scandal were a week, what day of the week would we be at?
This is the thing about the Trump presidency. He is like a planetary object. He distorts time all around him. So very hard for me to answer that question.
Well, that's California Democratic Congressman and amateur astronomer Adam Schiff. Thank you so much for joining us today. A reminder, my colleagues, hardworking folks, reached out to 43 current Republican lawmakers inviting them to come on our show today. All either declined or did not respond to our request. After the short break, we'll return with our weekly news roundtable with names familiar and new to our listeners. It's an all-star lineup. We're excited. We'll be talking about the week's top stories. You can join our conversation. Did it mark a turning point in the Trump presidency? How fair is it to start putting impeachment on the table? I'm David Folkenflik, and this is the new On Point.
This message comes from On Point sponsor Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, introducing their all-new Rate Shield approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Quicken Loans will lock your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. States and MLSConsumerAccess.org number 3030.
Hey, this is Stretch Armstrong.
And this is Bobbito Garcia, the hosts of What's Good.
We're back with a brand new season.
We've got Erykah Badu, Lenny Kravitz, Black Thought, and more.
You'll hear B-side stories from A-list guests. Subscribe now.
This is On Point. I'm David Folkenflik, and now we're going to have our weekly roundtable about the news. Joining us from Washington is S.V. Datte, senior White House correspondent for HuffPost. Shirish Datte, welcome to On Point.
Hey, David.
And with us from Kansas City, Missouri is Colleen McCain-Nelson. She's the vice president and editorial page editor of the Kansas City Star. She was also White House correspondent for the Wall Street Journal from 2012 to 2016. Colleen McCain-Nelson, welcome to On Point.
Thanks, David.
And, of course, from Hanover, New Hampshire, On Point news analyst Jack Beatty joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, David, Colleen, and Shirish.
Shirish, let's start with you. We've had a president of unusual newsworthiness, blasting deadlines and shattering evenings and weekends for people at the White House and people in newsrooms. How unusual was the news of this week, the big news that we're talking about now?
Well, this was a day when he didn't drive the news, which was somewhat unusual. Usually our day begins with a tweet about something that, and then that becomes the topic of the day, whether we want it to be or not. this was something that he did not want to happen. Let's remember that. I mean, this conviction in Alexandria and then the guilty pleas up in New York, they set the White House back on their heels, and I don't think they've still recovered. We're seeing all kinds of different takes from Rudy Giuliani. Within the span of a day, you saw how many different versions of, are we going to pardon Manafort? Are we thinking about pardoning Manafort? When might we think about, I mean, I think that just goes to show just how disorganized the response has been. And this is something they, I don't think they saw coming, and they sure were not ready for it.
Sharish, as you've written about, the credibility of the president is at the heart of a lot of this. I think it's worth listening to what that president had to say this week and then hearing something that cuts against it. In an interview with Ainsley Earhart of Fox and Friends on Wednesday, President Trump denied accusations from Michael Cohen, that's his former attorney, that he knew about payments delivered before the 2016 election to women who had claimed to have affairs with him.
Did you know about the payments?
Later on, I knew. Later on. But you have to understand, Ainsley, what he did, and they weren't taken out of campaign finance. That's a big thing. That's a much bigger thing. Did they come out of the campaign? They didn't come out of the campaign. They came from me, and I tweeted about it.
Now, a lot of folks with law degrees and fancy pedigrees in such circumstances said it may not matter whether it comes from those campaign funds or not. But, you know, it's also worth hearing what the president sounded like when he was candidate Trump in the moment, talking with his fixer. Here is an audio recording of Trump as a candidate talking back in September 16 with Michael Cohen. According to what Cohen has said, the two men were discussing how to keep a former Playboy model's story of her alleged affair with Trump out of public view. Cohen ultimately arranged with the National Enquirer to pay her $150,000 to keep that story quiet. The audio recording is not great. It's hard to hear the president, but the first voice you'll hear is Trump's, and he's saying, so what do we got to pay for this? $150,000?
So what are we going to pay?
Funding, yes. And it's all the stuff, all the stuff. Because, you know, you never know where that company, you never know where he's going to be. Correct. So I'm all over that. And I spoke to Alan about it when it comes time for the financing, which will be...
Listen, what financing?
We'll have to pay you. So
I'll pay with cash.
No. I got... No.
Check. Colleen McKean-Nelson, what do you hear when you hear that, and what, how does it affect, if at all, the way you think about the president's credibility?
Well, the tape is one thing that the White House can't explain away. And there was an excruciating interview with Kellyanne Conway on TV last night where she just couldn't answer for the tape. And she just keeps saying, well, believe what the president is saying. The president is saying that he didn't know about the payment, at least not until later on. But the tape suggests otherwise. And that's pretty devastating. And you also saw the Washington Post take the extraordinary step of coming out yesterday and saying, this is a lie, what the president has said about this payment. And their fact checker said, this is not a falsehood. This is not misleading. This is a lie. And they lay out point by point exactly all of the evidence that proves up that what Trump has said about this simply isn't true. And the tape gives the lie to that.
How big is it to you? How big is it, do you think it is for your readers in Kansas City, in Kansas, in Missouri, over the question that the president has lied? I mean, he's basically acknowledged that he had these affairs. He does not seem to be denying that at this point. He seems to acknowledge those payments were made. How big is it a deal in light of all that he's now seemingly contradicted by the facts when it comes to his knowledge of the payments?
Well, certainly the president has been contradicted by the facts before. This is not the first time that the facts have undercut Trump. And so I don't think that his base is necessarily going to be rattled by this. But it's important to remember that his base, even if they stick with him and they don't seem to be moving, is a minority of the country. And eventually, whether his base sticks with him may become somewhat irrelevant. We started to see all of these dominoes fall this week, and what's important about this week is this is not the end. This is perhaps the midpoint. There's still a lot to happen here, and as Congressman Schiff said, there are still so many legal questions to answer, and so you see this kind of starting to spiral, and this may start to spiral outside of the White House's control. And so even though voters in Missouri and voters in Kansas who voted for Trump, many of them are likely to stick with him, but that may not matter in the end.
On Wednesday, my colleague Rachel Martin of NPR's Morning Edition asked Michael Cohen's attorney, Lanny Davis, whether his goal is to see that President Trump is charged. Davis didn't answer directly, but he did say this.
He is a criminal by the words of his own attorneys in directing somebody else to do the act. And why didn't he sign the check to Stormy Daniels? Because he didn't want people to know about his role. So he not only directed a crime, he's part of a cover-up.
Check, Beatty, how significant a cover-up is this? How significant a crime is it that's being covered up?
Well, its significance as a crime is in dispute. Its significance as a blow against the system is clear. You know, in the Constitutional Convention, George Mason of Virginia said that presidents should be impeachable not only for things they do in office, but a president who gained his office by undermining democracy and the rule of law. That is an impeachable offense. It's what Hamilton and the Federalists call in the nature of an offense against the whole society. Now, for over a year, the president has been saying people who bring up Russia are trying to make me an illegitimate president. He keeps using that word. I have never seen anybody argue that the Russian interference was decisive in Trump's victory. People say it was out there. The only person I've seen say that was James Clapper, and he didn't provide evidence. So people haven't been saying illegitimate. Trump has been haunted by the word. And, you know, Freud is clear in the psychopathology of everyday life that what we're really thinking gets into our conversation with Trump. The connection between his unconscious and his thumbs on the Twitter are just absolute. And we found out this week what the illegitimacy was all about. He knew, it's been preying on him, that he and Cohen deep-sixed these scandals, potentially, as Adam Schiff said, election-changing scandals to effectively defraud the American public.
Well, and let's remember, not everybody looks at it that way. Not everybody thinks of this consequence that way. And not everybody thinks the president is being treated fairly. I'd like to take a call from Dayton, Ohio. Kathleen's been listening. Kathleen, thanks for calling.
Hi, David. Right off, I was a Sanders supporter, but a diehard Dem all my life. I'm 66. Representative Schiff just said earlier that Congress has a role, a big role, definitely defending our system of checks and balances. However, and while I see the importance of Mueller making it up the food chain and taking down Cohen and Manafort, you know, both parties are so partisan. I mean, we witnessed Pelosi taking impeachment off the table in regard to the potential holding the Bush administration accountable for fixing WMD intelligence around their agenda. We witnessed Obama and Holder not prosecuting any of the thugs on Wall Street who brought our economy to the brink of collapse. And so, again, I mean, as the public, we watch MSNBC all day long focused on Trump, and Cohen and Manafort, and not digging into any of the bread and butter issues affecting the larger public. So the contradiction on both sides is abhorrent.
So you see, Kathleen, a problem with both sides. You want the swamp drained, but in your case, the critique from the left, and you see both parties failing to hold people accountable. Thank you so much, Kathleen. We're also getting a call from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, the aptly named David. Thank you for calling in. What's on your mind?
Hi, David. I'm 63 years old. I come from a highly conservative family, have been a Republican, registered Republican, voted the candidate until Trump got the nomination. And at that point, my wife and I were like, that's it. We cannot continue. And we have watched the decimation of the family values, deficit hawk party, just see to this abhorrent, as Kathleen said, administration who are very, very openly attacking our democracy. And I talk to Senator Lankford probably weekly. I talk to his office, and you know, I hear all the right things, but he votes Trump every time. Mm-hmm. And the voting is what really matters. And then just finally, you know, this is indicative of why 43 Republicans refuse to come on this show. What are they going to say? How do they defend themselves?
David, very quickly, let me ask you, you turned against the Republican Party for Trump. Are you hearing from friends in Oklahoma who didn't turn against the party because of Trump that they have been alienated by the kinds of things they've been hearing this week?
Oh, you know, my family up until this week thought I had been possessed by the devil, you know, and now they're, you know, my retort to them is, you know, I'm not going to gloat, but then again, I might when this is all said and done, because I've been telling you from day one, he showed us, Trump showed us who he was, and he has continued in that vein for, you know, 2 years. So, yes, absolutely. I have a lot of family that are very dismayed by my switch, but now are going, wow, didn't see that coming.
Thank you so much for your call, David. Colleen McCain-Nelson, you are, you know, oversee opinion writing and submissions from the public right there in Kansas City, and serve, well, a city that may be blue, a region that's fairly red. What are you hearing? Are you hearing that kind of transition of people turning against their party? Or are you hearing people standing by, as the president is quick to say, standing by their man?
Well, you're absolutely right. Kansas City is blue, but Trump won Missouri by 19 points. He won Kansas by almost 20 points. And so, I mean, we're still hearing from a lot of those Trump voters who are sticking with the president and who are echoing his language. And when he is up at 1 a.m. tweeting that this is a rigged witch hunt and there's no Russian collusion, I mean, we're still hearing that from a number of readers. But we do hear from some folks who have some doubts. And the question is whether their doubts would be enough for them to begin to kind of defect from the Trump camp, if you will. For so long, Trump voters have said to us, well, we don't like the way he operates, or we don't necessarily like this or that, but the economy is good. We like the tax cut. We like the fact that he's draining the swamp, or we feel like he's going to drain the swamp. And so the seeds of some doubts have been sowed this week. And as we see his allies turn on him, and as we see these convictions and these guilty pleas, the question is, do Trump voters start to think, well, perhaps he did something wrong? If everyone around him committed crimes, how is it possible that the president's hands could be clean? And so we haven't seen a widespread defection at this point, but some people are beginning to have doubts.
We have a comment from a listener on our website under the name Politics Watcher, who says Trump has sunk so low he has to heap effusive praise on a guy for the heroic accomplishment of not cooperating with the feds. He's speaking about Paul Manafort. And indeed, speaking to Fox and Friends on Wednesday, the president criticized the very idea of cooperating with a federal investigation and prosecution.
One of the reasons I respect Paul Manafort so much is he went through that trial. You know, they make up stories. People make up stories. This whole thing about flipping, they call it. I know all about flipping. For 30, 40 years, I've been watching flippers. Everything's wonderful, and then they get 10 years in jail, and they flip on whoever the next highest one is, or as high as you can go. It almost ought to be outlawed. It's not fair.
And in addition, one of the jurors speaking after the Manafort verdicts were in on Fox News, herself an avowed Trump supporter, talked about the responsibility and the seriousness with which the jurors in that room took their charge from the judge.
How close did this jury come to convicting Paul Manafort on all 18 counts?
By one. There was one holdout.
So you all agreed on the 8 counts. The 10 others, there was one person who kept you from making that next step.
That's correct, yes.
What was their reasoning, if they shared with you?
Reasonable doubt.
So in that case, she had talked about the fact that they put aside political views and took that hard. In this case, one juror did not convict on the other charges, but Paul Manafort found guilty on 8 charges. Manafort, of course, the former campaign chairman. Sharish what are we to think about the fact that Cohen has now accused the president of collaborating in crime, but also that Paul Manafort is in very grave, legal jeopardy? He's been found guilty on 8 counts, and there's another upcoming trial that may cut a little closer to the bone of the original mandate of the Mueller investigation about Russia and the election.
Right. Well, there's a few things about that. I mean, I have some sources who point out that, well, people who cross Vladimir Putin end up dead sometimes. And that's what he may be having to do if he wants to talk about more details about the Russia probe as opposed to tax fraud, bank fraud, et cetera, et cetera. On the other hand, with that other trial coming up, you know, he's not a young man. I don't think he wants to spend the rest of his life in prison, so perhaps that's more of an inducement. But, you know, I want to mention about, I know all about flippers. The president of the United States said, I know all about flippers for 30 or 40 years. Who does he know? Because I was reminded of that movie, The Goodfellas, when the apprentice mobster, right? You know, he's arrested for the first time, and they're all proud of him because he didn't rat anyone out during his court appearance. I mean, what is happening here? I mean, I just don't understand how he can, you know, throw his Justice Department under the bus and celebrate basically a mob ethos.
Well, it was pretty remarkable to hear him say, you know, I've known a ton of guys over 30, 40 years who did this. As you say, we have been discussing this week's biggest news stories. You can join the conversation. Sharish, Colleen, and Jack, of course, we want you to stay right there. And listeners, we want you to stay right here as well. You can join the conversation. Are these legal fights a distraction or are they the main event? What do you make of the president's attacks on his own attorney general? And to whom does Attorney General Jeff Sessions owe his loyalty? It's Folk and Flick Friday. I'm David Folk and Flick, and this is the new On Point.
This message comes from NPR's sponsor, Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting to your short list of qualified candidates fast. With Indeed, post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free when you sign up at Indeed.com/NPR podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
Hey, y'all. I'm Sam Sanders. I host an NPR show called It's Been a Minute. Every Friday on the show, I talk out the week of news because sometimes the best way to process everything going on right now is through good conversation. Download the show and we'll process everything together.
This is On Point. I'm David Folkenflik. We're talking about a monumental week in the news. You can join the conversation. What do you think should be next? And what stories do you think were buried by an avalanche of news involving Paul Manafort and Michael Cohen and the National Enquirer? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm talking with HuffPost senior White House correspondent Sharish Date, Kansas City Star editorial page editor Colleen McCain-Nelson, and of course, On Point's news analyst Jack Beattie. I want to talk a little bit about how things are going on the other end of the telescope of law enforcement. That's the nation's top law enforcement official. President Trump once more blasted the attorney general in an interview with Fox and Friends on Wednesday. Trump criticized Sessions for recusing himself from the Russia investigation and said he only made Sessions attorney general because he felt he was loyal.
Jeff Sessions recused himself, which he shouldn't have done, or he should have told me. Even my enemies say that Jeff Sessions should have told you that he was going to recuse himself, and then you wouldn't have put him in. He took the job, and then he said, I'm going to recuse myself. I said, what kind of a man is this? And by the way, he was on the campaign. You know, the only reason I gave him the job, because I felt loyalty. He was an original supporter. Mm-hmm. He was on the campaign. He knows there was no collusion.
And just in case you think that was off the cuff, I have in front of me 3 tweets from the president this morning. He says, about Jeff Sessions repeatedly going on and on, invoking a litany of officials at involving the Justice Department and other places that he says are essentially part of the deep state against him. And, it is really one blast after another. It's not perhaps surprising that last night Senator Lindsey Graham, the Republican from South Carolina, went on Fox News and said that not only do Trump and Sessions not have a good working relationship, but he stressed that he thought every president deserves an attorney general that he or she has confidence in.
the president and the attorney general do not have a good working relationship. Every president deserves an attorney general they have confidence in. As to Jeff Sessions, I've never met a finer man. He was a great senator. He's a great lawyer. I think he's been a good attorney general. But this is not working, so I hope the relationship gets better. If it doesn't, I would imagine the president is going to look for a new attorney general.
Jack Beatty, you've thought long and hard about administrations spanning the decades, and the question about the relationship of the nation's chief executive to the nation's chief law enforcement officer pops up from time to time. How different is this tension than it would have been under Clinton during various investigations or President Reagan? How significant is what the president is doing to his attorney general right now?
Well, President Clinton had a good deal of tension with his attorney general, Janet Reno. He was very unhappy with her because of her independence. Mm-hmm. Again and again, this would happen. And his FBI director, Louis Freeh, as well. So it has a precedent, but he did not take it public. It was within the administration. It was known he was unhappy, and because of her independence. The striking thing was that Jefferson Beauregard Sessions took time off from, you know, reversing civil rights and splitting families at the border and cracking down on illegal immigrants, took time out from that to really defend the autonomy and integrity of the Justice Department in a sort of stinging rebuke to the president. And it's passing strange when one has to look at Sessions as a sort of avatar of integrity. He's mm-hmm. a man, after all, who lied to the Senate when he in his confirmation hearing about his connections with Russia. Nevertheless, he cut a profile of
which is what required him his interactions with Russian figures required him to step away from overseeing this investigation itself.
Exactly. That was why he had to. That's right. That's why he had to do it. He didn't do it voluntarily. The Washington Post had to come out with the story that he'd had this contact. And ethics people in the Justice Department, as elsewhere, said he had no choice but to recuse himself.
Mm-hmm. I want to take a call now from Columbia, Missouri. Steve, thanks for listening. Tell us what you're thinking.
Hi, David. Well, I was going to agree with your very first caller who said that both sides have exhibited the same type of method when talking about what's going on currently politically in the United States. I would like to ask you and your panelists to each two questions. First of all, do you really have
This is my first day on the job, Steve. You can't take the job away from me right away.
No. Well, can anyone really have confidence that the FBI's investigation into the Clinton campaign's collusion with the Russians was a credible one, especially when she was exonerated before Hillary Clinton had ever been interviewed? The second thing I would like to point out is that Representative Adam Schiff talked about President Trump acting like a mafia don.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you and your panelists don't remember this, but I think the president is just following the same playbook that Bill Clinton did. I remember James Carville warning Kenneth Starr he was only one indictment away from having two busted kneecaps.
So, Steve, let me ask you something very quickly before we let you go, which is this. First off, it sounds to me like what you're saying is, look, this is just the way partisans behave, and this is the way it works, and that you don't have great trust in the way the Justice Department handled the Hillary Clinton campaign. Let's say it is the way both sides behave. Is it okay then for this particular administration, happening to be a Republican one, to act that way?
No.
So you it gives you pause regardless. But that said, you feel as though this is pretty much the way Washington works.
It's unfortunate that we have gotten to this point. But one thing I do agree with the president and his criticism of Jeff Sessions is that there should be a second special prosecutor looking into the Clinton campaign collusion with the dossier.
Okay.
That's clearly a Russian connection.
Well, Steve, thank you so much for your call, for your input. Shirish Date, there were a number of hearings on Hill actually about a variety of things involving the Clintons or that ended up involving the Clinton campaign from 2016. What do you think is likely to play out? Both houses currently still controlled by Republicans. What are you hearing from your sources on the Hill about where they want to go with all this, if anywhere?
You mean before the elections, or because if
let's take right now. Right now, you know, Republicans don't know if they're still going to control the House, right? After
right.
the election. So, what are you hearing in terms of what people are willing to do now with the information
Nothing.
Now before us?
Nothing, zero. I mean, you know, the election's basically tomorrow. It's only a couple months away at this point, and so the Republicans have no interest at all in digging into this before the midterms. And let's remember this, though. The one thing that members of Congress are most afraid about is losing re-election. And the day that they think that backing Trump is going to hurt them rather than help them, that's the day you'll see kind of a sea change and maybe start seeing some committee hearings and investigations from the Hill. Now, if the Democrats win, it's a whole new ballgame, and it doesn't really matter what the outlook is right now. People will start rethinking things very closely if it looks like Trump's numbers are going to only go down from there.
Colleen, you know, in Missouri, there's a Senate race shaping up. Colleen McCaskill is a Democrat in a fairly reddish state. There are also individual races, I believe, in suburban Kansas where there's some Republicans in some possible vulnerable circumstances. How are politicians approaching this issue as they look towards the elections in November?
Very carefully.
Very carefully.
Much like in your experience this week, asking 43 Republicans to be on this show, they've been kind of quiet about Trump. As you note, in Missouri, there's a really tough Senate race, Claire McCaskill versus Josh Hawley. Josh Hawley has already been endorsed by Trump. Trump has campaigned for him. Josh Hawley has tied himself very closely to the president. And when you interview Josh Hawley, the first thing he will tell you is that he's endorsed by Trump. And so now he has a tough decision to make, just in how he's going to navigate this situation. He also happens to be the Attorney General of Missouri. He's the top law enforcement officer. And so what is he going to say if the president continues to be credibly implicated in a criminal act? And then you look across the Kansas border, we have an interesting congressional race where Kevin Yoder, who represents suburban Kansas City as a Republican, he has also been endorsed by Trump, but he's running in a swing district. He's running in a district that Hillary Clinton won by 1 point. And so he also has a very tough line to walk. And so both of these folks are going to have to decide. And I think this is going to kind of be on a minute by minute basis as we see what happens with Trump. How closely are they going to tie themselves to the president? Are they going to continue to tout this endorsement? And so far, nearly every Republican seems to be making the calculation that sticking with Trump is the better purely political calculation, at least for the next 75 days, they hope. And so at this point, it's been the silence from Republicans this week has been stunning. And you've not seen Profiles in Courage where many Republicans have been coming out and saying not that they would say something really bold, but even to just say they're troubled by what they're hearing. You're not even hearing that from them. You're not even hearing them say, I'm concerned by who the president has surrounded himself with. I'm concerned that perhaps he could be implicated in this. You're hearing none of those things so far. But Republicans are also kind of taking a pause this week and waiting to see what happens next.
No, the pre-Labor Day respite, I suppose. It does feel to me as though we're sort of – what you're describing is this kind of – it's like a video game with two completely different scenarios playing out in front of you. You have these folks who are just not even acknowledging this as an issue as they're on the campaign trail. And it seems to me as though a lot of Democrats are very wary of getting too national and too Trumpy and just sort of letting the story play out for itself. But you also have the president directly addressing – the highest level possibility, worst case scenario. You know, in an interview with Fox and Friends on Wednesday, the president said the economy would tank if he were impeached.
I'll tell you what, if I ever got impeached, I think the market would crash. I think everybody would be very poor.
Jack Beatty, they're talking, you know, the president of the United States is talking about his own potential impeachment. Now, of course, he's saying, don't do it, folks. It'll wreck the country. I'll drive the car. You know, the car will drive itself into a ditch if this happens. But, you know, the very fact that he's talking about it, you know, in previous administrations would be, to my mind, almost unthinkable. Most presidents, I would think, would never want the word to pass their lips.
Yes, I mean he's got the message of Tuesday. He understands what's on the boards now. He was tweeting at 1 a.m. this week. To paraphrase W.H. Auden, in the nightmare of the dark, all the dogs of justice bark. He's hearing those dogs barking, and we're going to hear
Auden.
More. And quoting, yes, indeed. That has the mobster sound to it, too. You got a nice little economy there. It would be a shame if anything happened to it. I mean, we've never had a president like this.
It is telling. I want to also take Rama's call from Gloucester, Massachusetts. Rama, thanks for listening and thanks for your call. What do you think?
Well, it's all making my head spin.
Workers
I don't know where to begin.
Their bargaining power.
The loyalty of to Trump. First of all, thank you to David from Oklahoma, the Republican who said finally enough is enough.
Mm-hmm.
Have we reached the Fifth Avenue? When he said that I could kill someone on Fifth Avenue and nothing would change. But it's too bad that Adam Schiff couldn't say, yeah, let's impeach him. I mean, you have Democrats that are interviewed and say, we got to wait till the Mueller investigation plays itself out before we see. No, he's done so many impeachable offenses already. Why are they not saying impeach? Are they waiting till November till they get all the Democrats on board before they want to start the impeachment process? I mean, let's impeach the guy now. And shame on all the Republicans for not coming on. Shame on all those Republican people for supporting Trump. It's blatant racism.
Rama, thank you for your call. You know, putting aside for a moment impeachment, although I think you're hearing that a lot online and from a lot of certainly Democratic and liberal critics of the president. You know, let's think for a moment about the law enforcement aspect of it. The New York Times has had a running list of everyone who's been charged as a result of the Mueller investigation. I took some fairly messy notes myself. But if you think about it, here are people who are fully cooperating with the federal prosecutors. Rick Gates, he was the deputy ex-campaign chairman for Trump. He pleaded guilty to multiple counts. The former national security advisor for the president, Michael Flynn, let's not forget him. He pleaded guilty and is cooperating. Michael Cohen, as we've heard, the former attorney of the president, pleaded guilty, cooperating. George Papadopoulos pleaded guilty. It's not clear to me the extent to which he's helping the prosecutors, but he is cooperating to some extent. Another attorney for Gates and for Manafort. Given immunity we've learned this week, David Pecker, he is the chairman of the parent company of the National Enquirer, as well as the according to the Wall Street Journal, Vanity Fair, and the New York Times and others, as well as Dylan Howard, the editor-in-chief of the National Enquirer. They were involved in the payments to Paula McDougal and to the woman known as Stormy Daniels, the porn film actress, who both of whom have said that they had affairs and were paid off to keep those affairs quiet in the waning weeks of the 2016 election. Paul Manafort not cooperating yet, but in the wings. And one question has been about Alan Weisselberg, the longtime Trump Organization chief financial officer, somebody closer to the action even probably than Michael Cohen. The Wall Street Journal is reporting today that he has been granted immunity in the Cohen probe, and that is after he had been subpoenaed to testify earlier before the grand jury. Shirish Date, give us a sense of what this means for Washington. We don't have a ton of time left, but set the scene for what this degree of cooperation means.
Well, the Trump Organization, the president liked it on the campaign trail, say this is mega thing that spreads across the continent, 1,000 employees. It's not. It was a small family business with a relatively small number of people working there. And this one guy probably has a lot of information, and I bet that a fair amount of it is not going to be favorable for the president.
You know, it's been a roiling time, a presidency born in the media. Now the scandals from the tabloid National Enquirer may surface. Details also from all these cooperators with the prosecution, questions of how this will be handled on Capitol Hill. It is clearly the story of the week and the moment, but it is one that we have shared today with Colleen McCain-Nelson. She's vice president and editorial page editor of the Kansas City Star. Colleen, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Shirish Date, a senior White House correspondent for HuffPost. Appreciate your time, Shirish.
Been my pleasure.
And On Point news analyst Jack Beattie. Have a great weekend, Jack.
Thank you, David.
So there you have it, the first in what I hope are many Full Conflict Friday roundtables to come, an exercise of democracy in action, an ongoing conversation for you to hear and for you to take part in. We'll try to approach this with a sense of history, humanity, humility, and humor. and we have such a great team to do it. Coming up Monday, we'll get a jump start on the news with top reporters who will share what they're working on in the week ahead. I'm David Folkenflik, and this is the new On Point.